Welcome to Off the Bench with Danny Cannell.
Back to throw, first and 10, the pass is deep to his tight end.
And Rajah Bell.
Bell has done three things. 22 for Rajah.
Saw the future of football right before your eyes. Just yell it out, man. He can't guard me.
Many doubted we'd ever see it. But here it is. The return to glory.
I got chills.
Yeah, he's fired up, man. That's, look at that. That's when it started to get me. That's when it started to get me.
Oh, man. What a weekend. This is Cannell and Bell hanging out Monday after the Masters. Tiger Woods back at the top of the golf world. Just checking out some of those highlights. I'm getting goosebumps again. It's tearing up just a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Did you cry yesterday when you watched it?
No.
How can you not send a message?
No.
I was bawling.
Like, were you?
Oh my gosh. I was watching it with my daughters and I was explaining to them,
sure,
like what, with the magnitude of everything he's been through.
Yeah.
And, when he hugged his kid and he had his son there and his daughter,
yep,
Charlie and Sam, and he gives him the hug and just like the emotion, I lost it. I was,
yeah,
like, this is unbelievable what we're witnessing.
Yeah, I mean, I could see where you might. I didn't. But
I'm a crier, though.
I was,
in movies, I'll cry. I'm sappy.
I'll cry, too. Yeah. I didn't get there yesterday, but I was moved. Like, I felt, you know, we'll get into the way he played and, you know, where that stacks up in terms of him hunting people down and all of that. But in terms of, like, and we were arguing with Coco off air.
Yeah.
This is a human story. This transcends golf for me. This is someone that not too long ago seemed to have hit rock bottom at a personal level. And whether it was his fault or not, the point was he was a shell of a person that we remembered. And I wondered whether we'd ever see this guy again. My kids certainly don't know him. They played all his video games. They hear daddy talk about how Tiger is in. They've seen daddy sitting at the TV just waiting for him. And then he's never really gotten it done. So they don't know. And then for them to see it yesterday, it's a whole generation of people that have never been exposed to this. So to see him rise from the ashes, so to speak, and regain this form, and then to have his kids there and his mom, and you know, I just thought it was awesome, dude.
That's where it got me, because, and we've talked a little bit about this, like one of my, like I wish my kids could have seen me play.
Mm-hmm.
Like, so I understand that
me
feeling
too.
Of,
me too.
You know, just to have them, to have a photo op, to have them see dad in his uniform, like all that stuff is really cool. And I'm sure Tiger had those very real feelings too, because yeah, they could see a lot of it on TV, and I'm sure
right. They
know Tiger's something, they know dad is something special, but to actually get to take in that moment and share it with them, that's because I could relate to that somewhat to, mm-hmm, some extent. I was like, what an unbelievable feeling of accomplishment. Like, and he even said that's what made that one so special. And then when they showed the flashbacks in 97 when he was hugging his dad, mm-hmm, and his dad passed away and now he's hugging his son, like the generational ties, like all of that just kept tugging on me. And this, what's part of makes it a great story. I came out yesterday and sent a tweet, and it was, I hope everyone's appreciating watching the greatest comeback in all of sports history. There were some haters on there. Coca's a hater in our control room, our producer.
Sure.
I don't understand that. I understand if you want to have a debate. Like,
sure,
there are other incredible comebacks, but I don't know if you've had somebody with that's the greatest at what they do fall as far to where, you just said it, I didn't know if he would play competitively again. There were certain points when I don't think he knew if he would play competitively again. Then it's like, can he compete? Can he make a cut? And to get back to the point where now we've seen him actually get to the pinnacle of the sport, that's what I think makes it so special. And it wasn't just an injury. It was his personal life.
Sure.
It was all of it. His you know, it was his family, because he lost his wife.
People dropped out of his camp. They left him for dead.
Yes.
People wanted no part of him.
Yep.
I mean, I remember having the argument, not to cut you off, with my in-laws and different people about, you know, whether or not you could respect anything he had ever done because of what he had done in his personal life and where he was. You know, there were people,
yeah,
that were all out, completely out. And I didn't hold any, you know, hey, it's your choice to be that way, you know? But then when you factor in the back and so on and so forth, if you want to have an argument with me about whether or not his comeback solely on the golf course yesterday from the 2-stroke lead for Molinari and Tiger coming back and winning it, where that stacks up all time, there are probably a lot of other performances like in an event that might beat that. But in terms of overall,
right,
I'm with you, dude. Best.
That's where I feel like it is. And you know, you talked about the people leaving him. Sponsors left him. Friends left him. Everybody
gone
left him for dead. And it's also in an era where we talk a lot about it. And there were some epic videos yesterday of people, you know, golf experts, one Brandel Chamblee. We talked about his juxtaposition. He's like, he'll never be the same. He'll never golf again. Like, he's never going to win again ever. Don't even think about it. And everybody said it. Mm-hmm. Like, a lot of people had that type of set because it was so bad. I mean, we were just watching clips before when he's trying to hit a driver or a three wood off the deck and he goes down in a heap of pain, you know? And so I think, again, like, don't come at me with, you know, we got people tweeting at me saying, oh, well, the 3-1 comeback for the Cavs to win a title. Like, that's stupid. If you want to, like, I think legitimately, I was looking this up because Ben Hogan, same sport.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's arguably maybe one of the top three or four golfers in the history of the sport, had an incredible comeback from a car accident. He and his wife were in a head-on collision with a Greyhound bus.
Okay.
And this is, of course, in 1949. So we don't really know about it.
But this
but
is the
I was
same
researching
language
the
now.
History. Yeah. And he came, so he broke. He had a double fracture of the pelvis, a fractured collarbone, a left ankle fracture, a chip rib, and near fatal blood clots. He would suffer lifelong circulation problems after that. His doctors said he might not ever walk again, let alone play golf competitively. While he was in the hospital, his life was endangered by a blood clot problem, and he had to tie off his vena cava. I don't even know what that means.
Okay.
But he walked out of the hospital 59 days later, and then he came back to win again on tour, won majors. Like, that's an incredible story.
Yes.
If you want to have that debate with me, then we can do that. But don't come at me with, Coca, give me some of your examples. What was
Sean Livingston?
Yeah, don't even come in here with that, because there are always, like, you can find a lot of guys who come back from an ACL.
Mm-hmm.
You can find a lot of guys who come back.
Paul George, he said.
Yeah, because it was a nasty, ugly incident. Yeah. Peyton Manning had a bunch of neck surgeries. It was cool. But all of it, the physical, the mental, the personal, all of it, you cannot come close to doing what he did and going through what he did.
There was a time, you know, on the back end of it, as he's starting to climb again, and he he's let the personal stuff go and he wants to play golf again. Were they at the World Hero Challenge or somewhere? He was chili dipping.
Yes.
Little chips around
the
green.
He had the yips.
He had the yips. He was fractured as a golfer, mm-hmm. and he put those pieces back together. And what I'll say to a Brandel Chamblee or anyone who really just completely gave him no chance to ever regain form, you probably couldn't see it because you can't do it.
Right.
It takes a different kind of dude. And it's not just Tiger. They're out there. I mean, you're talking about the Tom Brady's. You're talking about the MJ's. You're talking about those champions of champions that can do what it takes to get back. And your ordinary layman, even myself, you might not be able to picture it. It seems impossible because you don't have what it would take to do that.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yep. It was really fun to watch. The front nine, I was like, Francisco Molinari is going to win this. I was like, the guy's money. He's like even keeled. He kept making like
a robot.
8-10 footers that he was just dropping in like nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And then you saw other challengers rise and it started to get really interesting. Dustin Johnson started challenging the leaderboard. Brooks Koepka was right up there. There's Patrick Cantlay comes out of nowhere. He's on there, which is exactly what we wanted. It was the drama. Mm-hmm. There was a line from David Duval, which I think is epic, and it came like when it was probably about a year and a half ago. David Duval works for the Golf Channel, and everybody was talking about Tiger Woods coming back, and a lot of the young guys had been on record saying, we want him to come back. We want a taste of what it feels like to go against Tiger on Sunday.
Careful.
And David Duval said, be careful what you wish for. And I think it was like at the end of last year, now you got to see it. And I do think, like, Brooks Koepka, who's been money, had an opportunity to have to birdie 18, mm-hmm. missed the putt.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Francisco Molinari collapsed pretty bad. I mean, he was on the par 5 and he dropped the ball in the water. Like, it was getting pretty ugly. Other guys, Cantlay, he had the eagle to get up there and his name was on the leaderboard and then cratered.
He was in the lead.
Yeah. And then all of a sudden, like, he bogey, like, just fell off the rails. I think that's the type of presence that Tiger Woods has. And I think it does have an impact. I think guys are realizing, be careful what you wish for.
Absolutely.
Which does beg the question now, what's next? Cause now he's got 15 majors.
Mm-hmm.
He's got to get to 18 to catch Jack. I think now that's the debate that has to be had. He's 43 years old. He's still, Jack won one of his at 46. I think as long as he stays healthy, he's going to scare it. Like, I think he'll get close to it. And I mean, if I was betting, which you probably can, it's a long-term bet, I would say he does get it.
I'm
not betting against that dude anymore.
4 back surgeries is scary. So I'm with you. If he stays healthy, I would bet that he probably gets it done.
Yep.
But four back surgeries, and the back is one of those things that you're just one misstep away or one police slide into your ankle away from having to catch yourself, and now you've thrown a disc at a – that was actually hilarious to me. That guy was
hot. Security guard,
and trying to like keep the patrons back, and he slid into him.
I mean, what, how bad would that have been?
Oh, my
goodness. He would have like torn his – or rolled his ankle like Tony Finau did. That could have been one of the worst epic mistakes.
He's a 50-to-1 bet right now to win the Grand Slam, something that's never been done in golf. 43-year-old, four-time back surgery, 50-to-1 to win the Grand Slam. I don't think he does that.
No.
But PGA Championship has been moved up this year. It's a month out. Right. Yep.
And don't forget, but see, here's where the good. So are you saying that's good or bad?
I think it's good for him.
Right. And it's also a place where he's won at
Bethpage. Bethpage, right. And then you got,
US Open is at Pebble Beach, a place where he had one of the most historic, epic, dominant performances in the history of golf.
I think he might get another one this year.
I know. Yeah. It's crazy to say that. Like we would have never had that conversation. And also, so here's where I think one of Tiger's greatest edge is now he's got the intimidation factor.
Because
before, I think a lot of those guys were saying, yeah, we want a chance at Tiger. Now they're like, uh-oh. If they see Tiger on the board, they know he's a factor, and that puts more pressure on them to produce.
The doubt starts to creep
in. And it's going to have a pretty incredible effect on them.
To your point, purely from a golf perspective, I thought Tiger was okay yesterday.
Right.
I thought he made a timely – he made a few timely shots that applied even more pressure than his name and presence alone applied.
Yep.
But generally speaking, he even alluded to it. He just plotted his way around the court, around the course, and guys just got a little shook.
Yep. They fell apart. He didn't.
Yeah.
And it's funny because, you know, his biggest criticism from a lot of his critics were he's never come from behind in a major. He's always led with 54 holes and then just maintained the lead. But Jack Nicklaus said that was a great philosophy because then you don't have to press.
Right.
And you don't have to try to do things. And I think other guys started pressing. They started getting nervous. To your point, like, I think the shot on 16, the par 3, when he almost made a hole in one.
That's huge.
That was, I think, the shot of the tournament. Mm-hmm. That's the one you'll remember for Tiger Woods. Here's a little bit of Tiger after his round, talking a little bit about the challenges he faced.
He could have had more drama. Than what we all had out there and 9 away I'm balding. this stuff is hard. just to come back here and then to play as well as I did and did all the things, all the little things well this week, and to do it here. This has meant so much to me and my family, this tournament, and to have everyone here. It's something I'll never forget.
I think he's handled this better than everybody else. Like I said, I was crying.
Yeah.
Like a lot of people were crying. I mean, the fans were going nuts, and he definitely had an exuberant moment. But I think like that right there, it's clearly exhausted. Like he had to wake up at 4 a.m. to make sure he had to wake up his back.
Mm-hmm.
That's the biggest question mark for me is the health. If he stays healthy, I think he'll get there. But it's a huge question mark. Even during this weekend, I was really nervous about the weather because we talked about it a little bit early before the tournament. I was like, uh-oh. And there was the one time they had a 40-minute delay. I'm like, how does he come back from that?
And he didn't come back great.
Right. If there's any setback with his health, then I think, again, but the guy's already come back from so much. Like, what's to say he wouldn't do it again?
The type of guy you just don't bet against.
Right. You really don't.
You, like, don't. You don't.
And it's been the same thing with Tom Brady. Like, yeah, don't bet against the Patriots and Belichick and
MJ. Don't bet against him.
For LeBron getting to the finals. Yeah. Like, just don't do it. He's one of the most clutch dudes we've ever seen in the game. So the PGA Championship odds, what you were talking about, Tiger's the favorite, 8-to-1.
I think Bethpage was going to be tough for him to win.
Yeah, it is more of a
grind. It is a challenging walk of a course. Yep. And just those are going to push him to a limit that a 43-year-old golfer with a bad back. I would bet the field in that one. I think Pebble is
that's
probably
a place perfect for him. Because also, to your point, Bethpage is really it's going to be a challenge to drive the ball. He's still spraying it a little bit, but Augusta's not that hard of a driving course either because it's so pristine. The first cut is not that unbearable. But if you hit it in the rough at the
you're in the fescue over there.
Yeah, you're
chopping out.
You could be blown up there. The odds to win next year's Masters. He's also the favorite, 8-to-1. Again, I'm going to wait and see how things go before I put a bet on that one. You know, I'm going to wait a bit. All right,
cash in though.
Yeah, exactly. I did. So I took Tiger to win any major this year. I didn't think it would hit this soon. Like you and I talked about it. Like I thought he would be top 10.
That's great.
Like that was as bold as I was going to
get
ready
out
to go.
Of the way.
But I felt awesome about him after Sunday and watching him, like even on the first hole on Sunday when he striped his 3-wood right there, and there was a confidence about his walk.
Mm-hmm.
You could just see it.
Yeah, you could
tell there was something different about him, a confidence factor that was there. All right.
new CBS Monday.
Federal agents!
Hands where we can see them!
NCIS Hawaii is back. About to set it all on fire. New criminals to catch.
Armed robbery, aggravated assault, murder.
And new investigations to be solved.
These guys were good, but even masters make mistakes.
Vanessa Lachey and featuring LL Cool J.
Violin Island, you got it.
Welcome to paradise.
A new NCIS Hawaii, Monday, 10, 9 central on CBS and streaming on Paramount+.
Baseball has begun, which means you need to listen to Fantasy Baseball Today in 5, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network. Join Scott White, Chris Towers, and me, Frank Sample, every Monday through Saturday as we deliver all of your fantasy baseball needs in just 5 minutes. We'll break down the biggest performers, news, and prospects who could make an impact this season. Make sure to download and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, the Odyssey app, and everywhere else podcasts are found.
All right, welcome back to Kinnell and Bell. A little more discussion on the Masters, because I was there on Saturday, which we talked about. I was rubbing it in. I got my hat and my lid on. Do you like the lid?
Yeah, I do like the lid.
I like the little braided thing across the
You know what I didn't like? Allow me, real quick, keep your thought.
Yeah.
That's old school, and I dug it. Adam Scott's pants.
Oh, the pleated
with
pants?
With the pleats?
Yeah.
They got to go away.
Awful look.
Can't do that.
Awful look for him there. Definitely got some gear. I actually got you something there that I got to get to tomorrow. I forgot to bring it in today.
Yeah.
So I'll get that to you tomorrow.
Right.
It's a really cool experience. Like, it's a bucket list item. It's obviously really super hard to get into. The rules are over the top.
Yeah.
Like, so it was one of the weirdest things for me, but it was kind of refreshing, was no cell phones. Like, you go there and you are leaving your cell phone at the door. Like, don't even bring it on the grounds.
So they pat you down?
They have a wand. They have like a metal detector, and they'll say no, and you have a checkpoint where you can leave your phone. You can do all that. So once you're in, like, so I was there with a couple other guys, a couple of our bosses, and we were there and we went into the store to get some gear and it was packed, and it's like a mass, it's like a pretty big store. So you can kind of get lost. So I was like, the plan was we're going to shop, and like it was jammed. So like, we'll meet outside. So we go, and I go out. That's old school. Yeah. Like, you got to meet somewhere.
Right.
So we come out, and I get out, and I'm like, oh, shoot. And I felt like I took a long time. So I'm looking around, like, where is everybody? So I'm waiting. Then I was getting kind of nervous, like a little kid. I couldn't, there's no way.
Right.
Thankfully, they came out about 5 minutes later, but it was that time. Then actually, one of our bosses, we got split up, and we lost him for the rest of the day. I was like, we never got connected again because we couldn't text and say, hey, meet us at this certain spot. One of the things that I thought was really cool, obviously the food is part of it, the pimento cheese sandwiches, the egg salad sandwiches, it's all, and like prices, I think that's, it's really cool. But like celebrity watching, like people watching.
Let's see.
So outside the shop, we're, sitting there, and, the buddies that were there were like, hey, there's Josh Allen, quarterback for the Buffalo Bills. I'm like, oh yeah, like he's big dude, like he stands out. And then, so we're looking at him like, well, wait a second, that's Sam Darnold right there with him. They were there together. Later, I go, we're in the line to grab a beer, and sitting there, like two people in front of us, Marcus Mariota. And I know Marcus, so we ended up talking to him. Could not have been a nicer kid. Like, he, and I've always like covered him when he was at Oregon.
Sure.
He was talking to all the people in line. So you see that Michael Phelps walked right by Michael Phelps when he was there. He was there the whole weekend. Like,
right.
You saw him behind the shot on 16.
Right.
And he had like a mob of people around. The thing that was funny about Darnold, the quarterbacks that were there, like they kind of just went like kind of just
under the radar.
Nobody saw him. Justin Tuck, former New York Giant. I ran into a teammate of mine in the Denver Broncos, Mike Leach, his name is. He was a long snapper. Hadn't seen him in probably 10, 12 years. Ran into him just randomly walking around, so we got to catch up a little bit. But it's like, it's part of like, then you see all
any
the
outside
winners.
Any outside the scope of sport celebrity that you saw?
No, not too many. I'm sure they're there. It's like there.
Yeah, but you didn't run into him.
I didn't run into him. So, but it was cool. And everybody there, it's kind of, I don't know if it's Southern hospitality or if it's just everybody's on cloud nine because you feel so happy to be there.
Everybody's
really friendly. And when you're in these galleries watching, I will say this, golf is a really hard sport to watch as a spectator because it's just so spread out. And I mean, I'm not complaining, but it's just, it's hard to see what's going on. The best spot to watch is Amen Corner. Like, you realize why it's a special place. That's where a lot of the action starts to take place. But also from a viewing standpoint, you can see the approach shots on 10 and the putts on 10. And you see the tee shot on the par 3, 11, and you can see them putt out there. So you can see a lot and just be in one place. And there's a beer stand right behind there.
How early do you have to be there to get a seat at one of those, at one of the greens? A front row type of seat at one of those.
Like, I don't know if you've ever seen, like, on TV, sometimes they show it at the gate. They have, like, all these people at, like, 7 a.m. and they sprint out. And they'll just put their chair there and then they'll leave.
So, Okay, so that was my next question.
Yep.
What happens when you got to get up, go to the bathroom? You don't necessarily have a buddy with you holding your spot.
There, so this do is, this is the cordial. Your... This is probably kind of the cooler things. So if you get your seat and you put it there, this is what people do. There's little spots for a name tag on the back.
Uh-huh.
So they'll drop their seat. They'll leave for the rest of the day. Like they'll get 17 green or whatever green. They'll put it there and they'll leave for 3 hours and
come
back
to catch a final group like yes. playing 17.
Port and I, our boss, were sitting there on the 18th tee box and there were some seats there. I was like, there's no one there. Let's just sit there. So we sat there and watched for like a half an hour and it was somebody else's seats. And if they come back, they would have said, excuse me, that's our seat. And we'd have been like, all right, fine, take your seat.
Oh, wow.
So you get to like use these different seats. And like the best
part. It takes a certain type of person though.
It does. Not everybody. It's kind of those unwritten rules.
Right.
Like just, hey, you're
going to. No, I like it. I mean.
Yeah, but I can see it getting ugly too. Like some guy's like, hey, wait a second. This isn't your seat.
That's great though. I was always curious about that. If you got to get up and go somewhere.
Next year we're in. I've already worked on it. That's what I was selling the whole time was Kennel and Bell on location. I'm looking out for you. So we're going to do that next year. We're going to do it for
my dude.
All right. What are they saying about me? What do you mean? All right. The NBA playoffs. You're going to have to get me filled into this one because with no cell phone for the entire day Saturday and then watching most of Tiger yesterday,
yep.
get caught up a little bit. So the Oklahoma City Thunder, just kind of by one word. I don't even know what word it was. They lose in their opening round against the Trailblazers. It was a good game. I actually caught the end of that game because I had taken the Blazers -3.5, so I saw the end of that one. But Paul George said he couldn't lift his shoulder just 4 days ago. How big of a storyline is that going to be in this series if Paul George is not 100%?
And he still scored 20.
I know. That's what I was going to say.
He didn't shoot great. He came out in the post game and said that it was just a matter of rhythm for him because he hadn't shot the ball in 4 days. So unless he is lying, I don't foresee it being a huge deal. The Blazers are due for a playoff win. They were 0-0 in their last eight. They've been swept out of the playoffs the last two times they were there. CJ McCollum played great coming back on limited minutes for the last few games since he's been back from injury. Damian Lillard was doing Damian Lillard things. And they got a huge night from Enes Kanter. And Enes is one of those guys that, you know, offensively, you know, because he's not a great defender, offensively, you know, people kind of overlook his contributions, but he was great yesterday. So you're on their court. They're due for a win. Two of their stars do what they're supposed to do and they get a contribution from Enes Kanter. I'm not too worried about that. If I'm Oklahoma City, I would be a little bit more concerned with Russ. He tweaked his ankle. He was limping around a little bit after the game. Mm-hmm. I'd be more concerned with that. You can always get a shot, a shoulder, if it's like impinging or, you know, there's some sort of restriction because of swelling. I mean, at this point in the season, you always take a cortisone shot, give it 2 days, and then it usually frees it up. You can deal with the whatever injury it is afterwards. But as a Oklahoma City fan, I'm not too worried. You would have liked to win game one.
Right.
But all you really got to do is come out and win game two on their court, and you're fine.
So the reason I took Portland in this one, remember they rested McCollum and Lillard the final game of the regular season?
Yep.
So I felt like they'd have fresh legs. It's that initial game, the first playoff at home. You're going to have a hyped-up crowd. I think things will settle in a little bit, and then you can have the discussion after. Like, if Portland goes up 2-0, then it's a different discussion.
Different discussion.
And you see how they look with some of those injuries that are creeping up to them.
Absolutely. They were a more hungry team, too. If you saw some of the shots that Damian Lillard hit, while they were from 30-plus feet, if you're a hungry defensive team, someone is up plastered to him. He was shooting those shots with 7 feet of space. That's not real playoff intensity defense. So I think that Oklahoma City is going to need to look at that film a little bit, and a lot of guys will sit around because in the midst of it, you think you're doing what you're supposed to do. That film the next morning or that next afternoon will show you, hey, man, you weren't locked in the way you thought you were locked in.
Right.
You'll get a different animal out of Portland. I mean, out of OKC in game two.
Now, there was a more surprise. So that one wasn't a huge shock. There was a surprising upset in round one with the Toronto Raptors losing to the Orlando Magic, which I don't think a lot of people saw coming. Milwaukee had the number one seed, but it was still like Toronto had 58 wins. They got Kawhi Leonard. That was the big move. But there's a recurring theme developing in Toronto in the playoffs, and it's been going on for some time. Kyle Lowry was held scoreless. And this is a dude where, love him, great attitude, but he's got some sort of mental hang-up in the playoffs. It's unbelievable.
This is a perennial all-star.
Yes.
He scored
zero disappears
in the game yesterday.
Yeah.
This is a huge issue. He had some, a couple years ago when he was playing Cleveland, I don't know if you remember this, but he would have these bad games, and then he'd throw his headphones on, he'd do a really quick press conference, and then
go out and shoot.
He'd be out there shooting.
Yep. All night.
I used to do that as a player. You do that in your auxiliary gym where the eyes can't see you, where it doesn't look like you're in search for something that you should already have. And I was a you know, I was a role player. Your stars cannot be putting it out to the public that they are struggling mentally in playoff situations. It looked like last year he kind of found a rhythm, at least a nice safe space where he did enough for Toronto to be a better playoff team. This was a poop show. He was really bad. And on the flip side of that, Orlando had 7 players in double figures.
Mm-hmm.
All of their little role guys, not just their stars. They don't really have any real, real stars. But like, DJ Augustine was great. 25 points, big 3 to win the game. And everybody else chipped in the way they needed to. Kawhi, 25. Pascal Siakam, 24. Marc Gasol and Danny Green, 13 apiece. That was about it. That's not going to get it done. And I didn't see this one coming at all. But if Kyle Lowry is going to be bad, epically bad,
yeah,
this is going to be a dogfight.
I'm with you, because there was when he had that performance against the Cavs and he was doing that, he was really, maybe to a fault, refreshingly honest about
his struggles.
Yeah, it was too much. But you start pouring your heart out to the media, then other guys. Do you think guys use that in trash talk on the court? You think they'll use that against
possibly
him? Like, you know, the playoff stuff.
He ain't built for this.
Right.
You know, he ain't built for this. Once he's 0-4.
Right.
Oh, yeah. He's with us.
They're coming.
He ain't built for this. You already know. Yeah. Oh, yes.
Exactly. Oh, so yes. Then it becomes a thing, and then it becomes this hurdle where even if he has a good game, which he had last year in the playoffs, then you're always like, is this dud back in there? And this is one when he goes 0 for 7 from the field, 0 for 6 from three pointers, from the 3-point line. It's just as bad as it gets. Do you think they're in trouble, or do you think they'll be okay?
I think they'll be fine. I know Orlando's one of the hottest teams in the NBA, but I don't know that they have enough to do this over and over again to Toronto. I could be wrong. I mean, I didn't see this one coming. This is the interesting part about the Kyle Lowry, because a lot is on Kyle's shoulders right now in terms of whether they win or not. But even bigger picture, you're trying to entice Kawhi to stay. You're trying to show that you guys can be a viable Eastern Conference representative in the finals for years to come. If he doesn't trust that his number two is a playoff performer,
mm-hmm.
that's an added level of responsibility that Kyle's got on his shoulders right now. You know, he's
right.
Letting a lot of people down with that.
Right. It's going to be interesting to see how this whole thing plays out, because I think one of the important things, especially if you're a higher seeded team, you want to take care of business and get to rest. Like, you want to get through
like the Bucks.
Exactly. And the Bucks handled their business. They won 121-86. The Rockets had a really impressive win against the Jazz. You don't want to have these lingering questions that people are asking still, like us, and then the press starts doing it. Your coach has got to get on you. It's just not a good situation.
Every extra minute you have to play in the playoffs is a potential injury waiting to happen, and not just in that game, but the teams that are able to bank rest for their starters that starts to pay dividends in round two certainly shows up in terms of an advantage in round three if you make it that far. So getting those guys off the court, only having to play 30 minutes, I don't know if that's what Giannis played last night. Golden State does it. You start to bank the rest for those stars, and it really pays off. You know who's in for a dogfight?
Who?
The Sixers.
Welcome back to Kinnell and Bell, hanging out, recapping the Masters, Tiger's epic performance, NBA playoffs, bunch of stuff to get to today. Before we get into the Sixers-Nets series,
mm-hmm.
So Saturday morning, got there late Friday night, Saturday morning, we're staying in we rented a house in this little community, and there was a gym
at
the community. So I was like, let's go get a workout. And so we're working out.
Better than me.
Rory McIlroy was in there.
Word!
You know what he did, which I think was a total boss move? He had the earbuds in.
Uh-huh.
And he was on the whole time. And I think he was talking to his trainer, because it sounded like he was like, all right, so what's next? And he was getting but didn't get off, call back. Like, you think you could text him a certain.
Sure.
I think he didn't want to talk to anybody, so he acted like, hey, I'm on the phone, you know? And he was nice to everybody who was there.
Right.
But then I was like, he only did a 15-minute workout. I'm like, that's not championship material.
Oh, word.
So I was like, yeah, he's not going
to. He's not going to win it. Okay.
Got to put in a little more than that. But it was pretty cool. You see those little types of things throughout.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
Pretty cool thing. The Nets, Sixers. You said the Sixers better watch out. They could have their hands full. The Nets are a team that are kind of playing with house money. They're young. They're fun.
Yep.
The chemistry seems to be there. And sure enough, they take game one from the Sixers in that series. It was pretty convincing. 111-102. Ben Simmons, not the best performance. 9 points, 7 boards, 3 assists. Here's why I worry about it. It was a bad performance. The Sixers fans playing at home were letting them have an earful. They were booing. Here's why I think you have to be really careful, especially in a place like Philly or New York, or, you know, pick your spot where the fans are a little bit more vocal and animated. Those people, and they're very, I would say, working class fans, you got to let them do their thing. Like, if they're, and they're, They're going to boo. Hold on. So Ben Simmons quote after.
Nope.
If you're going to boo, then stay on that side. That's how I feel. If you're a Sixers fan and you're going to boo, then stay on that side.
Now,
you're okay with that?
Ben clearly doesn't understand what the Philly fan is at heart,
mm-hmm.
because that's what they do.
Right.
I do not support it. That team has given you no reason to boo them.
Mm-hmm.
They have been fantastic all year long. Yeah, they've had their ups and downs, but management shuffled the pieces on them. And I said coming into the playoffs that moving pieces, that many pieces that late in the game is going to have an effect on them. But from everybody in Philly's perspective, that is a team on the rise doing really good things, and there's an excitement level around them. They don't perform well on one night. Do not boo them. It's a terrible feeling for an athlete.
I get it.
We make millions of dollars, and we're supposed to be out there and we're supposed to be perfect, but at the end of the day, they're human beings. Don't boo them because they don't play well in one game. Now, they go out there.
That's what
they're
fans
down.
Do.
No, not
that,
our
but
fans.
But
no.
That's what
no.
The fan is the fanatic. Like,
no.
That's where it comes
don't
from.
Don't boo
that's
me.
The Philly fanatic is the ultimate example.
Look, if I've given you 10 terrible games in a row mm-hmm. and we are underachieving, you've got a right to boo me. But if I come out there and don't perform well in one game at home, it's our home damn court. Don't boo me, man.
So there's, you know, you were saying about that. So I experienced some of that throughout. We've all been booed, mm-hmm, right?
Sure.
My biggest performance at Florida State was the comeback, the choke and doke. We were down 31-3. I'll never forget walking off the field. We're down 28-3 at halftime and walking through the tunnel. And everyone was like, you suck, Cannell. You suck. And then people were like, we want the backup. Benches, you know, like
sure,
all this
sure.
stuff was being yelled at me. I heard that. And I was like, all right. And I kind of felt like this. Then we come back. And I remember walking through the exact same tunnel. And everybody's cheering like, hey, what a cool way to go. Great time. And I was like, kind of like in the back of my mind, I'm like, these are the same people that were booing.
Sure.
So I think it's kind of like I realized and appreciated that. But I would have never come out and said that afterwards. It just like I understand. Like I'm sure some of these people paid a lot of money for their tickets, and they feel
care.
Like it entitles them to think whatever they want. All right, so you know what?
Yep.
Ben Simmons agrees with me.
Okay.
Because that was his comment on Saturday. On Sunday, changed his tune a little bit. I'm sure his people talked to him.
Of course they did.
So he said, it's Philly. That's what's going to happen. I love it. That's how Philly is. If you can't play here, you can't. They're going to give you bleep. They talk bleep. It is what it is. If you're not playing well, they're going to let you know. But I love being here. I love the fans here. I agree with them because, again, talking about like the fans' experience in Florida State, when I was in the Atlanta Falcons, awful. If you're bad, they don't go to the game. I'd rather have people that care and that are going to be there in a full stadium and
that's
boo
a different
you.
Conversation. That's a different conversation, whether you rather have it packed and be booed versus have it empty. I'm with Ben in that, you know, it's a great place to play, and I support you coming out and saying, I love being in Philly, and I would rather play nowhere else, and all of that. I'm cool with that. But don't lie. Don't come out and say that you're okay with them. You didn't like it, and that's fine. Nobody likes being booed. I think he should be allowed to say it, and I think Philly fans, the same way you boo somebody and you think they need to take it, if somebody comes out and says they don't like you booing them and they don't want you there booing them, you should sit back and take that as a Philly fan. It's just the pot calling the kettle black, no?
Yeah.
It's the same exact thing. Don't get all offended as a Philly fan if an athlete comes out and says you're poopy fans for doing what you do. You come out and boo them for not doing their job great. If they think you're not doing your job great, why can't they say it?
True. Good point.
I don't know. But I get it doesn't make his life any easier. And
I just kind of think it's part of the drill. Like being a professional athlete, it's part of it. Like if you're booing a college kid, I think.
When does it help? When does being booed at home help?
Never. Okay. I mean, it made me crater. I was like, oh man, I want
to
play this.
Isn't a fan's objective to have their team win a championship?
Yes.
Try to be the best home court advantage you can provide for that team out there.
Yes.
Make it feel like a safe environment where they can't lose. So if you're doing anything to hinder that, and you're failing as a fan. And I'm telling you right now, booing your home team never produces.
Agreed. Agreed with that. So it disenfranchises the players.
Right.
And they feel like I did. I was like, forget these people. I do always think though that it is the boos that are the loudest. And so I would say if there's 20,000 people in an arena, you could have 2,000 booing and it's going to sound like, oh my gosh.
The Phillies whole thing.
They're going to be 20,000. They're all going to be doing.
Yeah.
Maybe they were booing because they might have caught in what happened on the bench, which I do think was a horrible look when Amir Johnson was checking his cell phone during the game late in the fourth quarter. They were down 16. Eventually they would go on to leave that 111 to 102 and Joel Embiid. They look at the phone and they're laughing about it. I thought it was a horrible, immature look, and I am totally okay with the Sixers fining him.
100%. If you wanted to take a step further than that, I don't know how much Amir Johnson's been playing for them. I don't know if it's a necessary backup to have during the playoffs in case something happens. But I have no problem with you suspending him for a game. There are a lot of distractions in any sports season. When it comes down to playoff time, your focus should be right where it needs to be. Mm-hmm. Laser, blinders on. We laugh about LeBron going zero dark 30 or whatever he calls it, because he makes a spectacle of it. But the point is, you should be like that. There should be nothing else on your mind, at that point. And so to take it onto the bench during a game is one of the most irresponsible things I've ever seen. I used to eat Snickers bars down at the end of the bench,
right,
and stuff like that when I knew I wasn't playing, but I was hungry.
Right.
You know, I wasn't down there. I wasn't down there playing tic-tac-toe or Monopoly or doing something like, you've got your phone in your sweats. Where are you even keeping the damn phone?
Right.
And if you're Joel Embiid,
Don't
bother me with that, bro. Like, right. Where's the leadership on that team?
Right. Joel Embiid came out and tried to defend him, said he has a sick child. But if you look at their, they're kind of laughing about what's going on. Here's a take that I totally don't understand. Draymond Green came out and defended him and said, Alex Kennedy, NBA Twitter account, said, if I was a Sixers fan, I'd already be frustrated watching this game. Then I see this, I'd be infuriated. Totally agree. Draymond quote tweeted it and said, why? You check your phone at work, right?
Nah.
It's different. See, that's why I don't, that's where I think Draymond just needs to stay out of it, and just not even go there. But it's just, I don't know. I think it's an awful look, and I think they got to be really careful because I think the series, like you were saying, I think they've got their hands full.
They've got their hands full. I mean, Jimmy Butler came to play. You know, they've got this interesting mix of really good players, roles probably not clearly defined. The sense that I get, this is just purely from spectator, I've got no inside knowledge. It's a lot of people played their position during the regular season. Jimmy Butler specifically kind of took the back seat to a lot of stuff that was going on there and allowed other people to be kind of the focal point of that offense. Never really felt like that's who he is at his core. Everything about Jimmy has never said he wants to do that. I think in the playoffs, you're going to see Jimmy take the bull by the horns and try to be the guy.
Mm-hmm.
That's not good because now those roles, we've now thrown all these roles back into the hat and we're picking out of the hat again. That's something that should be clearly established by this point. And I feel like they always had this little bit of a struggle there in Philly as to whose it was and who was going to be closing and who was going to be the leader. And I think they're going to have some struggles in the playoffs. If they get it together, yeah, they can beat Brooklyn. They're going to get more out of a first series than they want. But I don't know what the ceiling is for the team this year.
The Warriors handle their business against the Clippers. Steph Curry went off for 38. It was the most fun thing about that was Patrick Beverley going on Kevin Durant. So
yeah.
Those two get ejected together. But like, if you're a team going against the Warriors, I would try the same thing. Because Patrick Beverley has that reputation, correct? Like, he's going to be a guy that gets in your head, tries to talk trash. He's a good defender.
Mm-hmm.
I would have like, yeah, if you can get Kevin Durant ejected every game, you might as well take your shot at that. We'll take that trade.
Absolutely.
If you get them both out of the game, sure, we'll do that.
Absolutely.
But I think the Warriors just showed what makes him so tough. I think Steph showed his health is fine. There's nothing, bothering right now. And I think they'll do what we think they should do. And that's roll through the series and they get back to rest.
The Warriors are the one team in the playoffs that can flip a switch.
Yeah.
And minus LeBron. LeBron could do it sometimes. The Warriors are the only team that can do it. Everybody else is kind of who they were going into the playoffs. The Warriors will flip a switch. They'll be a different animal.
Doc Rivers said after, he's great, talking about Steph Curry. He's a great player. I was telling the coaching staff, I still think Steph Curry is one of the most underrated players in the NBA. I don't even know how it happens, but he is. He's taken for granted. Agree or disagree?
Yeah, I do.
Yeah.
I do. It's a pretty fascinating conversation, too. A few years ago, he was the NBA darling.
Yep, and MVP.
He's only gotten better, and now nobody talks about Steph Curry. It's Giannis. It's James Harden. It's anybody else. And Steph is still doing remarkable things. So I think that's a pretty interesting conversation that we never have.
Do you think it's because the players aren't enamored with Steph Curry? Because, I mean, there is some animosity towards him that he didn't grow up like a lot of them did. His dad played in the game. He gets a free pass a lot of times from media. Like, he doesn't get criticized for his taunting and some of his antics the way other players would. Do you think that has something to do with it?
Maybe.
Could be that.
Kobe's dad didn't play in the NBA, but he was a professional basketball player. There are a lot of guys whose dads were career professional basketball players, maybe not in the NBA. It might have something to do with it.
Yeah.
And
it's probably more likely that he's on a super team.
That's probably what it is.
You're going to give the credit or it's going to spread. It's going to take away from some of what he does.
Sure.
Because everybody say, oh, it's the Warriors. They have so much talent on the team and it kind of gets overlooked.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, for sure. All right. Welcome back to Kinnell and Bell. So today is tax day, April 15th. It is also the day that Russell Wilson's camp gave to the Seahawks saying, we want to get a deal done. They've expressed interest saying, hey, you know, we got one more year left in our deal. We talked about it saying, I can't believe he's at this point of his career already. And nothing has happened yet. I'm assuming it's probably the reason for it is around this time of year, you see a lot of people report to their camps. They're probably when they start the official workouts. And so my hunch is, I don't think he'll get the extension announced today, but I bet Russell Wilson doesn't show up for workouts today. That's the extent of the hardball that he's going to play at this time.
Uh-huh.
If we don't have a deal, I'm not going to work out there. I'm going to stay in LA or, you know, wherever he works out, which I think is LA, and work out there and stay in shape. And until I get a new deal, I'm not coming to Seattle. And where it gets more interesting is as you get closer to like the official mini camps, which are mandatory, what does he do at that time? And those are probably in the next month or so. Because if he skips one of those, he can get fined. It's just a different dynamic. That's when every player has to be there. Because technically, these sort of workouts are optional, although a lot of guys have incentives, you know, for being there. But at this time, I don't think it's panic time for a Seahawks fan. But I do think it's interesting that this is taking place, this storyline, which no one saw coming 6 months ago.
I think you should be worried if you're a Seattle fan. Anytime your franchise quarterback and is given deadlines to your organization,
yeah,
there should be a little concern. I don't, on your concern meter, we can argue about where that should be, but
I'd say
it's a
five. I'd say five out of ten.
Okay.
I'd say it's about, you know, about a five. It's not more, it's not less. I think there should be a little bit of concern. I think the reason it kind of is elevated more than just a two or a three is because you're hearing various reports that Russell Wilson might want to play somewhere else.
Mm-hmm.
From Pro Football Talk, they had a league source that said the Seahawks think that Wilson would like to play elsewhere, even if he hasn't and would never say it. They also believe that this unspoken dynamic will cause Wilson to drive a harder bargain with them than he would with any other team. So no hometown discount for the Seattle
hometown
Seahawks.
Tax.
Yeah. Again, though, it's like, what do you, I think that Seattle should get it done. As soon as Brady and Drew Brees are gone, I think you could make a case that Russell Wilson is top three and maybe even top two. Because right now, you got to give Brady and Brees the advantage because of what they've accomplished and what they do for a team. But I think Russell Wilson is really close to Aaron Rodgers. And he's more accomplished. And now that you're hearing some of the baggage come out about Aaron Rodgers, you're like, maybe Russell Wilson is a better, more consistent deliverer that's had less injury history.
Sure.
That's younger. Like, I think it's a very fair conversation.
I'm not going to argue any of that. I'm a huge Russell Wilson fan.
Yep.
One of my son's favorite quarterbacks. You know, he wears number three like Russell Wilson. Like, I like him a lot. Here's what I'm going to say about Seattle. They've had success with the model of cheap quarterback.
Yep.
You hit on him in the draft, maybe you get a steal, and then you build around him with the rest of the money. The rest of the NFL has gone kind of in the other direction. We spend all the money on our quarterback, and now we're hustling and bustling trying to find mediocre pieces to put around him. The only one that's really ever done that great has been Bill Belichick and company, and they don't even spend astronomically on the quarterback, but they're able to kind of plug and play in other pieces. So if there is anywhere, and it's just speculation. There's anywhere that might flirt with letting something like that walk and not having to overpay for it. I think it's a team that may have just won their last Super Bowl with an economic bargain at the quarterback spot, especially if he's already let it be known that he would rather play somewhere else. That's all I'm saying. And this is just wild.
To your point, I wonder if, because this is where Seattle, maybe their hesitation is because they won when he was the third round pick and they didn't pay him all that money. They just paid Matt Flynn, you know, a bunch of money. And then Russell Wilson comes in there and takes the job. Maybe there is something to that because their success has dipped since they paid Russell Wilson.
Absolutely.
And they're probably saying, well, we don't have as much money to spend around. And if you look at some of the stories that are developing, because the NFL is a copycat league, the Rams drafted, you know, quarterback first round. So Jared Goff still on his rookie deal. Now he's not dirt cheap like Russell Wilson was, but he's a cheaper quarterback.
Sure.
Patrick Mahomes, Kansas City Chiefs, cheaper quarterback. You know, he's doing it.
Yep.
Some of these teams that have paid him, the Ravens paid Joe Flacco, went in the tank. The Falcons paid, Matt Ryan, dipped a little bit.
Right.
You know, even the Green Bay Packers just paying Aaron Rodgers. They, you know,
we're talking about no weapons. He's got nothing around.
Exactly.
Him.
So I think it's something. You better be careful though, because if you do try to go that road, you could end up like the Miami Dolphins, who have been looking for a quarterback and can't find one.
Totally.
Whoever gets Russell Wilson though, you know exactly what you're getting. It's a question of, can you put enough pieces around and maybe the defensive side of the ball, and can you spread some of that money around? I know it's a real dilemma. It's an interesting dynamic that's happening in the NFL. Like, what choice do you make? Do you want a top tier quarterback and have to pay him all the money and then take the risk that maybe the rest team isn't that good? Or do you draft a guy who knows if he's going to be any good or not and then build around him?
Right.
A fascinating dynamic that's taking place in the NFL right now. So we'll have to see, and we'll keep you up to date on that as that story unfolds. Luke Walton, we pretty much thought he was done, right?
Yeah.
I thought there was a sliver of a chance when Magic stepped down that all that mess might have saved Luke Walton's job, but there's also the chance that he went in there and they had a talk and both sides were like, you know what? Luke Walton's like, I got an offer already from Sacramento. I'm going to go take that. And the Lakers were like, fine.
It's better.
Perfect. Yeah. Everybody's in agreement. It's like a good breakup.
Mm-hmm.
So Luke Walton gets that gig. He's going to take over there. Sacramento, is this a good gig? We talked about Vivek Ranadive, the owner. They've got some young talent, but it just seems like it's always one of those franchises that just can't get out of their own way.
Yeah, I don't know. I can't. Sacramento, the jury's way out on whether they're run well or not. That dynamic and the demo of that team is better for Luke. Those kids are a generation removed from Luke playing. So there's no real conflict with, hey, I played against you and you weren't all that.
Mm-hmm.
He still has that with LeBron and Rondo and some of the older players. They'll look at you sideways. I played with you or against you, and I used to bust your ass. Mm-hmm. So that's a thing. He doesn't have that in Sacramento necessarily. So he'll be able to speak to these younger players in a way that a coach should be able to speak to a player, and they'll listen and try to act accordingly. Plus, there is some talent. There's some good young talent on the roster. So for him personally, who wants to get up and down, they want to run, they've got all this youth, I think it's a good fit for Luke. I didn't think there was a chance he could be in LA because I just don't think LeBron really respected him.
Mm-hmm.
And unless you're going to trade LeBron, and I've heard people say LeBron should be up on the block, and we can have that conversation at some point. But if you're not ready to trade him and you're going to keep him there and try to maximize the last little window he's got left, I don't think that Luke Walton fit there. And I really do think there are only a couple names out there. I know there. I did the news in 90 and they're talking about Monty Williams.
Ty Lue?
Yes.
Yeah. That feels like the direction.
And not because of his X's and O's. And I'm not taking anything away from T. Lue. He's a great coach. I mean, he's a good coach. I don't know that he's a mastermind, but he's got a relationship. They've been there. They've done that. You don't have time to be messing around in L.A. You just don't.
Yep. Did you watch Game of Thrones last night?
What?
You into it?
What?
Oh, what'd you think?
What? The real king?
Yo, no, okay. Find out.
Maybe yeah, I'm
we'll
in.
Do a Game of Thrones special tomorrow.
Yeah, don't.
I want to do a podcast.
I'll go break it down again.
All right, sounds good. We'll be back tomorrow breaking down some news out of LSU that's pretty interesting.